Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams
and Elizabeth Wallace, and you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 444. And tonight, we're recapping Welcome to Night Vale number 261, brought to you by Flakios. It's probably going to be a pretty quick recap because there was really just one major thing going on in this episode.
Yeah, and I thought that the artwork that they had for this episode was particularly disturbing. I'm sure Elizabeth will include it in the social media posts, but geez, it's a face inside a bowl of oat-shaped cereal, and it's like got its teeth out. So it's just, they always do such a good job on that.
Yeah, I want to say that's Jessica Hayworth, I believe, is the artist who does most of their thumbnails for the episodes, and always nicely creepy. So the story is that 6.5 years ago, and I think that's actually 6.5 years ago real time that this happened, the company Flakios in Night Vale was taken over by Kellogg's. As it turns out, they really didn't have a good time of it.
No, it was something like a season of churning death, of unstoppable churning death, I think is one of the ways they described it. I mean, it's like, take the worst corporate takeover you can imagine, where people get laid off and everybody's feelings are hurt and everybody's kind of suffering. Okay, it's not that. It sounds like it was literally hell.
Yeah. But they're back. They managed to escape. It took a lot of work, but they did it. And they've got all these new products and promotions they want to release. But before we get into that, we're going to jump into the community calendar.
Okay, so Monday is Jazzercise, and they're going to have all sorts of priests available. Oh, wait a minute. That's Jazzercise, I think. So actual Jazzercise is on Tuesday.
Actually, it's not even jazz exercise. It's jazzercism. let's see. Wednesday is bingo night.
And Thursday is filling in for Friday because Friday has had to take some time off due to the investigation by HR.
Saturday is toddler story time. You can come and tell a story as long as you're under the age of 4 years old.
Yep. And Sunday is a little bit of cleanup and running some errands. So it's not really a day off at all.
No. So to get back to the Flakios employees, this whole rest of the episode is all about the ways that they're celebrating. I mean, you can understand why they're celebrating. It sounds like they came out of something really horrible and now they're just cutting loose a bit. They're getting a little bit obnoxious, though.
Yep, they go to a restaurant and there's a lot of loudness and demanding cocktails that the restaurant doesn't serve and a lot of public displays of affection that make everybody uncomfortable, and they finally get thrown out and they all drive away, but not before one of them runs back inside and pays everybody's bill and then blows a kiss and leaves through the window.
Yeah. So when I say obnoxious, I mean obnoxious, but good-hearted obnoxiousness. So, okay.
So now they're just celebrating more by driving really fast and expensive cars through the town and getting group tattoos.
We briefly talk about how a new fruit inspection station has been opened up, but the people who are doing it are basically like thumping on the fruit that you bring and telling you when they think it's going to be ripe and admitting that they don't know much about fruit and they thought this would be the best way to learn some stuff. And I'm like, well, the logic is sound.
Yeah. There's also a new tattoo parlor in Night Vale. It's opened up in the mall. There was some controversy because they had some declaration about all art is permanent. But anyway, I really did like the name of the new tattoo parlor. It's called A Friend in Needle. Somebody in like real life needs to use that. But just ask the Night Vale people for permission first.
Oh, yeah, that's clever. And a little bit of news for everybody who is not liking how short the days are in the winter. There is now going to be an extra hour of daylight at 2 a.m. You're welcome.
Oh, speaking of 2 a.m., the marketing group at Flakios has been calling people at 2 o'clock in the morning to do market research. But their market research sounds like somebody who's stoned and like lying back on the couch and going, but what is grain? And it's been very disruptive to people's sleep, although some people actually find it helps them sleep better, and a few people have like continued on the discussion until sunrise and they feel like they've got a much better attitude about their whole life now.
Yeah, not bad. I shouldn't have been surprised that the sponsor this week was Flakios. Obviously this whole episode is brought to you by Flakios, but even that sounds like another stoned ramble talking about an O is infinite with a space inside. What happens to the space inside when you eat it? Does it get chewed up and released into the cosmos? Very rambly.
But the tagline is Flakios, back with a vengeance.
So we come back to the factory. I think the community has decided that maybe they're having a little too much fun. So the sheriff's secret police are there. Sheriff Sam is yelling over the loudspeaker. Nobody's really listening. They are getting ready to go ahead and charge the place because all of Sheriff Sam's posse are standing around going, raid. So we'll come back to that in a minute. But while we wait, we'll go take a look at the weather.
And to pull back the curtain again, we generally listen to the Night Vale episodes at 1.25 speed. We had to slow it down to normal after we heard the first few lines of the song. It's called Call a Cab by, who's the artist on this one?
By Sam Stone.
And it's just like, I think the first line is, everybody loves the cops. Who else are you going to bring in to come and shoot your neighbor's dog?
Yeah.
But it's so bouncy and fun.
It
and
is we're just really like, fun.
It's just all accompanied by guitar and just this toe-tapping beat to it. And it's so wrong. But just, yeah, I think if you wanted to piss off certain people, play them this song.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Really super clever lyrics. And, you know, I'm embarrassed to say how old I was when I found out that ACAB stands for All Cops Are Bastards. I just hadn't known that. And so that's why it's called Call a Cab.
Okay. Yes. See, I knew that and I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I caught it. But seriously, that's a thing that I really didn't know until like fairly recently. But anyway, very super fun song. Okay, so we're back at the factory and basically, I don't know, it's a dance, and they actually managed to pull the cops into the dance, and everybody actually seems to be having a pretty good time, and one of the cops is having such a good time, she remembers another life that she wanted to lead, so she left to go pursue a third life and not be a cop anymore.
Yeah, and she left her uniform on a saguaro cactus in the desert, which was then inducted into the ranks of the secret police, of course.
Yep. A representative from Flakio's finally stops to apologize for everything and saying maybe they've been a little exuberant and everything. Maybe they might have hurt some people. Maybe they robbed some graves for little trinkets to give away with their promotions. You know, these kind of things happen.
Yeah. It was a little light grave robbing, but they just, I mean, they know that their experiences doesn't excuse everything, but they have been trying to find a breakthrough in order to bring their products to more people and just expand the company. And it's just this whole long rambling speech about all of their ideals and what they want to do. And they finally hit on the real breakthrough. Toaster pastries.
Yep, that's it. Mind you, I do love a good toaster pastry.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, hey, yeah, that's great. That's fine. So, and Cecil approves of that as well, because between Kellogg's not being around and Flakio's production being shut down while they're celebrating, the cereal production in Night Vale is really underwhelming. So he's glad they're all going to get back to work eventually.
Yeah, I wish we had heard a little bit more about the whole takeover, because when they had some anonymous commenters from Flakio's talking about the whole experience of breaking free of Kellogg's, and they talked about how it was a real bloodbath, and then another anonymous commenter said, well, it wasn't like a literal bloodbath, and someone else said, other than with that one Kellogg representative, and they're like, oh yeah, there was some severing going on there, and all the anonymous commenters giggled, and then looked ashamed for giggling.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the anti-CEO stuff that is going on right about now, so I'm sure that's what it's speaking to.
Oh my
so,
God,
fun.
Live your life in such a way that if you get assassinated on a city street, you do not have a large part of the population cheering about it, because damn.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of that going around too right now, so yikes. No politics. So that's it. That's the end of Night Vale. So the next thing we want to jump into is we both watched two episodes of Beastars this week.
Now, I had mentioned that shit gets weird in the first episode that we watched, so you know exactly what I'm talking about now, I'm sure.
Yeah, is it towards the end where they talk about the coffee?
The coffee, yes.
A
civet cat, I believe, is the person in charge of making some of this new drugs that the Shishigumi are going to be pushing, and it is made from literal shit.
Yep.
And it's just, we're watching this, and it's like, you know, this tiny little civet cat in a business suit talking about how it's from his own shit, like the, you know, they digest the coffee beans, and apparently that makes really good coffee somehow. I don't understand how anybody managed to hit on this, but I mean, and also that civet cats have like a like an anal gland, I think, that expresses stuff that can be used for perfume, I think. And the civic head is just talking about how he used to be kind of distraught about how all of his best qualities only came from his tail end. And I just turned to Nathan. I said, why are the Japanese so weird?
I know. It's so odd. It's just, oh my God. He's like making this like flourishy gestures with his hand towards his ass and everything. I'm like, what is happening?
What is happening?
So weird.
So the Shishigumi are now been roped in by their new boss to basically hunt through the property of this civet cat on the factory and pick up the coffee beans out of the shit.
Yep.
So
they ain't happy.
Not happening. No.
No. Okay. So while that's going on, the Beastar, the horse, is, I don't know, the mouse is telling him about the latest UFC fight champion, which is a rabbit who was apparently taught by the same panda, the Legoshi's panda teacher and everything. And that actually doesn't come up anywhere else in this episode or the next episode. So I don't know if that's going to be an important plot point or not.
I have no idea. But what Yaya is, the Beastar, is really focusing on is Legoshi, to the point where he invites Legoshi to come have dinner with him. Mm-hmm. And it's all very weird and awkward because Legoshi just wants to wax lyrical about how good the carrots are that the horse is serving. So Yaya shows him his growing area in his great big penthouse room that he's got on the top of the skyscraper. And it's all these hand-grown carrots, but they're growing. When he pulls some of them up, they're attached to the skulls of carnivores. And that's just what the horse likes to do. If he finds dangerous carnivores, I don't know that they get any due process. He murders them and then plants them for compost.
Yeah. So there's not only that, which is like disturbing and everything, but you know, Legoshi was looking over at the Beastar at one point and talking about, he's wondering how herbivores can be so elegant. And I'm like, oh, okay. So the subtext is subtext again. That's fairly subtle. Mm-hmm. But later on, the Beastar is basically telling Legoshi that he wants him to apologize for the devouring that he did, or else he's going to be food for the gardens. And he tells him to get down on his knees. And I was like, oh, the subtext is text again. Okay.
Yeah. And this is the moment for Legoshi to shine, because Legoshi has been apologizing for being a carnivore since the first season.
Oh yeah. But he really takes it to the next level. My God, he's down there on the ground and you hear him doing something. He pulls out his fangs, like upper and lower fangs, yanks them out, hands them to the Beastar, or starts to, at least. I think he give it to him, or does he just throw it at him?
I think he just throws him on the ground.
Yeah. And then punches him, because why not?
Yep, that's where the second episode starts, is Legoshi has just pulled out his teeth, says he will have no use of them, so now he doesn't feel bad about punching the Beastar, which is what he does and knocks him back, and the Beastar is kind of like, I don't know, trying to play it down. It's like, oh, that's not a very big hit. But yeah, it kind of was. He's a little surprised now, because even bleeding, Legoshi is pretty damn strong.
Okay, so before we forget, though, some of the other little sub-stories that are going on in the episode, we've got the drama club is trying to figure out what they're going to do, because the school is going to be segregated now. That is definitely a thing. The Beastar also has a picture of the skulls that the elephants ivory came from, and he does a total like police procedural thing where he has the mouse zoom in on the photo so he can see this one pipe and tell that it's in this area of the city. So he triangulates his way to find out where the elephant skulls are so he can figure out who's been killing elephants and getting the ivory. Oh, by the way, ivory is one of the things that's going to get mixed with the civet poop to make a coffee that has the same effect as the Kynes soda.
Yep.
And there's a little brief moment where Legoshi, this is before he has yanked his teeth out, he's talking to Louis. Now, Louis hangs out by the black market because the smell calms him, so that's fine. And Louis thinks that the only reason why Legoshi likes Haru is the first female herbivore to come on to him. And I don't know, I think Legoshi realizes he might be right, but he still wants to protect Haru. And I think Louis, actually, I don't know, he's kind of understanding about it. And he has this line, he says, perverted freak or not, if there's something you want to protect, I think that counts as justice. And I was like, that's almost a t-shirt moment, just a little bit.
Because I thought that Louis was going to be really awful to Lugosi talking about how, well, of course you're a pervert because, you know, the only reason why you like Haru is because she was the first herbivore that came onto you. You're basically like all guys. So and it just like it turned around instantly from being accusatory to being really empathetic. And it was just a nice little scene.
Yeah, yeah.
So after a judicial bit of fire, I think a candle catches the carpet on fire and Lugosi leaves in the confusion, but not before stopping to bow down and apologize for punching the B-star because it's Lugosi. Mm-hmm. So of course he's going to. So he next wakes up and he's at the panda's room, but the panda is dealing with somebody else at the moment.
Yeah, it's a fox, I think a sand fox they mentioned later on, and he's saying how he doesn't see any symptom of kinds, so it's not like she went crazy because of a kinds thing. However, she did devour a rabbit last night.
Mm-hmm, yeah, so she's screaming. She's completely not cooperating with any of this. He's still trying to get her to calm down. Meanwhile, Lugosi is waking up and his mouth is like swollen three times the size because he pulled his teeth out and then stumbled into the panda's place and has been passed out this whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, while the panda is dealing with the fox, apparently he was checking for Kine's symptoms, but he didn't know exactly what it was until Lugosi writes on a piece of paper saying it's a meat narcotic. So I guess that's not common knowledge yet.
No, he starts writing something, answering the panda's question, and the panda asks for something more, and he says, I'll write you a detailed report. And then when the panda is talking about kinds, and that is when Lugosi writes down, it's a meat narcotic. He's like, really? How do you know? And he flips back a page, I'll write you a detailed report. And I just thought that was funny.
That's very clever. Yes. Now, when he's talking to the fox again about the devouring, when she kind of wakes up, it's a little like, again, you know, the Japanese get a little weird with sex. She begs the panda to have sex with her. And I guess it's because she wants to sort of escape from the memory of what she did. But the panda's not going to let her do that. And he's certainly not going to sleep with her. Definitely not while she's chained up. So there's that.
Yeah, there is that. But and Lugosi spends his time healing by helping to paint some of the rooms at the panda's building. And before he leaves, the panda gives him some false fangs that he can wear, which at first he doesn't want to, but you know, the panda's like, well, how are you going to eat? He's like, I'll eat porridge forever. And it's just Lugosi just has to punish himself, but the panda's like, just please just try them on. And Lugosi does, and he clicks his teeth together, and I really liked how they animated his mouth and made the little clicking noises, and he says, I do feel better now.
Yeah. Now the panda also managed to drop the information, another thing that Lugosi didn't know, that the B-star, the one that he had been talking to, the B-star's former partner is of course Lugosi's grandfather. So now Lugosi is in on that as well.
Yeah. I think the last thing that we see with the panda and the sand fox is they're standing outside and she's calmer now. And she tells him that she's going to turn herself in because the panda has said that people that get, you know, they do devouring stuff, it's usually better for them if they turn themselves in. I think they can get actual like treatment and be dealt with legally and all that. But she's just, it just seems like a lot of her soul is gone out of her, but she's just so, she just can't really get past what she did is the thing. She's not trying to say that she had a right to do it or denying it, but it's just like, how do you go on from something like that?
Yeah, no, I can't even imagine. And he had done this one point where he told her to smile, which, you know, if you're a dude, don't tell women to smile. It's kind of a rude thing to do. And it's also, people make fun of you for doing that. So, but he tells her to smile and she says before she leaves that she's going to keep her smile for now and he'll have to wait until she gets released before he'll see it. And he says it better be a damn good smile. And I'm like, are they in love? Is that what they're doing here?
Sure,
I don't know if that's what they're doing.
Sure feels like there's more of a connection than we've seen him have with any of the other patients.
Yeah. Okay, so then Haru and her rabbit friend Lisa visit this plant research warehouse, and it turns out it's a class on vegetable production and stuff like that. But Haru was telling Lisa that what she wants to do is open a restaurant that can serve both carnivores and herbivores, but the food will be so good that carnivores will be perfectly fine with eating vegetables, which I think is a really nice thing for her to do, even if the teacher ends up being an asshole.
Yeah, you can see her face just fall when the teacher talks about, oh, we've only got herbivores, that's good. And then just going on about how carnivores smell and they don't have as good a sense of palate and they don't really appreciate things and just like, and they're stupid, all this stuff. And then son of a gun, that Harlequin rabbit that had been bullying Haru in the first season that she's apparently friends with now, steps up and tells him that that's really rude and that he shouldn't talk like that about carnivores. And the teacher backs down and says, oh, yeah, well, that probably is kind of rude. So it's just like, ah, good for her.
Yeah, yeah. And you would think Haru would be really grateful. But there's this scene where Haru, Eiko is the name of the Harlequin rabbit, they meet up with her lion boyfriend because she's dating a carnivore. And Haru kind of like takes her to task because they were saying that, oh, yeah, they're dating because they've got mutual understanding and it's so great and everybody could do this. And I think Haru just thinks it's really kind of naive. And she says if mutual understanding was all it takes for carnivores and herbivores to date, they wouldn't see so many devouring incidents. I'm like, she has a point.
Oh, and she calls them both out and says that they're only dating because it's like a fad. They just want to be in on the latest thing. And Eiko is really angry at the lion for not arguing with Haru when she stomps away. And he's like, well, she's kind of right. I mean, we're just kind of having fun, aren't we? And Eiko can't believe that. And she just tells him to kiss her right then and there. And he does. And then he licks the side of her neck. And you're like, oh, this isn't going to end well at all, is it?
No. Oh, my goodness. Okay. We'll leave that for a second. The Beastar has found the elephant skeletons, and he can hear way far above him because he and the mouse figured out from looking at blueprints of the place where they realized the bones were, that there is like an open shaft from the fifth floor of this one building that goes all the way down to the basement. And that fifth floor is actually a counseling room where this gazelle runs counseling for herbivores. And the Beastar has puzzled it out and realized that the counselor is tricking them. They feel safe with another herbivore, but he's tricking elephants and killing them, dismembering them, throwing them down the chute, and then they steal the tusks. So he is actually in the chute and he can hear the counseling session going on right now. And he's got a tranquilizer gun with him.
Yep. And he crawls up over the edge and all of a sudden he sees a little recording device, tape recorder, whatever, phone, and it's playing what he thought he was hearing a counseling session, but it was a recording. And then somebody stamps down on his leg and it's the gazelle counselor. And he introduces himself, I think it's pronounced as Melon. Mm-hmm. And he manages to get the tranquilizer dart into Yaya's neck and then pushes him back down. And you hear him fall and then you hear the pause as he's falling. And then you hear the crashing sound as him hitting the ground.
Yeah, it's not going to be good. Now, here's the thing. When the gazelle confronted him, and this is definitely the boss of the Shishigumi, because you could see like the long tail that had been kind of like brushing in an earlier episode and everything. But he's wearing a face mask. He takes the mask off and the Beastar looks seriously surprised, and I guess he hadn't realized who it was. We don't see the gazelle's face after he takes it off, so I don't know. Are we supposed to know who it is?
I don't know. I don't think so, but from looking at some of the manga, there is going to be a part of the gazelle that is going to point to something. So okay. I will just leave it at that.
Okay. All right. I had a feeling you would know more because you read the manga.
Yeah.
So anyway. So when a few minutes later, we see Haru and she's kind of kicking herself for having been a bit of a twit about, you know, confronting her friend and thinking she should apologize, even though she thinks she's right. You know, what they're doing is dangerous. And but she doesn't think she should treat her friends that way. And she sees a commotion of people running. And I'm like, oh, they discovered the body of the Beastar. Oh, no. No, that's not what's happening.
She manages to work her way through the crowd and she sees what might be the lifeless body of Eiko, covered in blood, and the lion standing over her saying, look, I didn't mean it. And there has been a devouring. We don't know if she survived by the end of the episode, but it doesn't look good. And I guess he lost himself because he's just like utterly shocked and trying like, is she okay? And like, oh God.
Yeah. It was actually pretty gnarly. I was like, oh wow. That was pretty intense. You could see right before the ambulance came to pick her up, you could see her just barely breathing. So when the ambulance came to get her, she was still alive. Whether she survives, I don't know, because there was a lot of blood, a whole bunch of blood.
So much that someone has come out and started hosing it off the building as Haru was just standing there. Now, what was it that she was saying to herself that made her so upset towards the very end?
I'd have to go back and look at it again, because it's kind of like a little bit of a rambling thing. But the way I parsed it out was, she was upset because it is dangerous to date a carnivore. If you're an herbivore, this is the type of thing that can happen. She should have known better. I think she may have had the realization that that danger is part of why she's in the relationship, mm-hmm. is what I thought. Yeah. That's where that spark comes from. And that upset her because it's like, it kind of means you got a death wish.
Yeah.
You
know? Yep. Yep. So the next thing you see is Legoshi, and he's working, and he opens up the door, and it's Haro. And Haro says, I wanted to come and wish you a happy birthday. And that's where we leave the episode.
That's the end of the episode. So very interesting.
Yes.
That's pretty good. I mean, I don't know if anime tends to do like the mid-season finales and everything, or mid-season hiatus, whatever. But that was the sixth episode of a 12-episode season. So that is a pretty good halfway mark.
I think so. Yeah. And mm-hmm. The manga goes into more detail as people are considering the whole interspecies dating. But I remember them saying in the manga at one point that the government actually gives like couples of the same species who get married get like a bonus or something upon marriage, because it's something that society wants to encourage because mixed race children don't have an easy time of it. I'm like, ugh. Yeah. So I'm hoping they address that as like being short-sighted on the government's part. Like if we keep everybody in their silos, it just means you've got a whole lot of silos and nobody getting along with each other.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. Okay. So that's it for Beastars. Next, we're going to jump into the season 2 finale of Star Trek Lower Decks, which I just finally managed to remember to rewatch the episode because I knew that you had just watched it, so I can actually make like intelligent conversation about it.
Yay! This is a really good standard rescue episode. This is,
yes.
They've got a spaceship that is crashing towards a planet that hasn't had first contact yet, and they're surrounded by an asteroid field with a mineral that reacts badly with the shielding on spaceships, so they can't use the regular shield, but also the particles of the outer hull itself would react badly to this mineral and cause all sorts of problems. And the solution that they come up with is to skin the Cerritos to remove all of the outer plating. That was pretty bad.
Oh, yeah, it really was. Including, like, at one point, they also take off an entire hull plating. Everybody's in their spacesuits, obviously. But rather than look through the monitor when they're going to try and get through this field, Ransom is going to be piloting it by looking out the hole in the ship. So it's pretty badass.
And meanwhile, Boimler has to go swim through the navigation section. I think this has been mentioned in like other Star Trek properties that the navigators are two beluga whales, I think, mm-hmm. that they mm-hmm. just pilot the ship that way. Something about the fact that they're marine animals, they can think in, I guess, multiple dimensions the way you would for space travel. But the two beluga whales are just like hitting on Rutherford.
Constantly.
Relentlessly talking about, oh, hey, take off your clothes and come for a swim. You look hot. Maybe you should swim. And yay, no better way to celebrate than having a skinny dip. It's just he doesn't acknowledge it at all. I don't know if because he doesn't realize that they're hitting on him or what. But yeah, that was, and I like the all the sound effects they did for the whales talking and the little subtitles going. That was fun.
It was so fun. We had basically three other storylines kind of going on at the same time in this episode. One, Captain Freeman is going to be going to a new ship, and there are a lot of people who are pissed off at her, including Mariner, who doesn't want to admit that the reason why she's pissed off is because she doesn't want her mom to leave.
Right. Yeah.
And then another one where Tendi heard Dr. Tana say that she was not meant to be in medical, and she deletes her file. And so Tendi thinks she's being sent off the ship.
And one little minor storyline is that it was supposed to be like Captain Freeman Day on the ship, which, you know, mm-hmm. Mariner just kind of dismisses as that's for kids. And they're just trying to like install an appreciation for leadership or something, or for command, whatever, in kids when they're really young. But Boimler is participating and like making big banners and everything. And they're like, oh, isn't that for kids? And he gestures to the banner, not anymore. So he has to be a kiss up in the most endearing way.
Oh, of course. And one other little minor storyline is that Rutherford's implant has been throwing up error messages at him all day long. It turns out that it's because he's so bummed about having lost all of his memories of Tendi last season that now when he makes a new memory with her, he saves 3 copies of it, and he's run out of memory, but it's actually interfering with him being able to see what's going on. So he has to make a decision whether or not to keep those memories or just delete them. Now, it's deleting the extra memories, I should say. It's not like he'd be wiping out his full memory, just all of the backups.
Yeah, he has to learn to let go of all that. And he actually does at one point, because they're in a real dangerous situation. He needs all his faculties. He deletes everything. You see it all spinning away. And then you see these like shadowy figures looking over him. Like, and I think they were asking something like, do we tell him he has it? I'm like, well, if we do, we'll have to explain why we put it there in the first place. And then Rutherford is like, yay, the error messages are gone. Also, I think I remembered something I wasn't supposed to remember.
That's going to come up. And with the resolution of the whole thing with Tendi was that, no, Dr. Tana's not throwing her off the ship. She says she's way too good to be healing up phaser burns. She wants to put her through senior science officer training. So that'll also be coming up later.
Yes, and she said, oh, you mean like Jadzia Dax? And the doctor's like, Jadzia, I don't know who that is. What? No, like Spock.
So cool.
Oh, so, I mean, the whole thing, the big, I love a rescue with a time element. They're all racing against time. There's danger. There's Mariner finally confronting her mother and telling her, I didn't want you to go. And her mother's like, oh, I love you too. And also I was kind of being a jerk earlier as well. And so Mariner accidentally gets knocked through the hole in the bridge and she's flying into space and she just barely misses grabbing hold of a piece of the hull and she's about to spin off into space in the middle of this dangerous situation. And then somebody catches her by the ankle and it's the Andorian Jennifer that she has been kind of pissy with since the beginning of the season. So just, that was great. I'm a little surprised because I was thinking, oh, it's going to be her mom. It's going to be Boimler. It's going to be Rutherford. No, it's Jennifer. Aw, that's cute.
It's adorable. They actually talk in the bar later on and Jennifer kind of apologizes for having been kind of mean to her and everything. She's like, I thought you didn't like me. And she's like, no, I tend to do that when I like somebody. I tend to do things and push them away. And she said, so what I'm hearing is that you like me. She's like, no, what? Shut up. Here. So, takes him over to the table to talk to everybody. So yes, that will also come up next season.
So, I mean, the Cerritos saves the day. They rescue the ship. They manage to help with first contact. Everything goes perfectly. They're all celebrating aboard the bar on the Cerritos. And the captain is kind of drunk, but she finds out that they're sending representatives from command to the ship, and she's going to tell them that she's changed her mind. She does not want to leave the Cerritos, even though she's been working towards this promotion for ages. She has come to appreciate the best ship in the fleet, and the command comes in, and she tells them they don't have to say anything, and they say, yes, we do, and they slap handcuffs on her, and I'm sitting here, what?
Oh, yeah, she is arrested for the destruction of the Paclid world. She is totally being framed for it. They said they have evidence saying that she planted a bomb that went off while she was on a mission. How convenient. I loved in a way that I hated. And of course, everybody who's in the room with her is saying, no, we got to fight this. We got to fight this. She said, no, let them do their jobs. We'll figure this out. Don't tell anybody. I don't want anybody to be bothered with this. She opens the door. And of course, the entire crew was arranged there to congratulate her. And they get to see her perp walked past everybody.
Everybody. Yep. She gets taken away. All the main characters run to the window to watch the shuttle fly away with them. They're all looking sad, and you see the wonderful Next Generation to be continued font.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
I love the callbacks that they do on this show that most people wouldn't even realize are callbacks.
I noticed this at one point. There was like a caption, like, you know, when they do like a place caption or something in a Next Generation episode, that was a style they used for one. And it makes my heart sing because it is perfect. The font is great. Everything is exactly right out of an episode of Next Generation. I love details like that.
Yeah, and I know that they had cliffhanger episodes in TV shows before this. They must have. But the first time I remember getting to an end of an episode and realizing it didn't wrap up and we were going to have to wait until the next season to get the resolution of the cliffhanger was Star Trek The Next Generation when Picard was turned into Locutus of Borg. That is burned into my brain as the very first time we had that kind of a cliffhanger at the end of a season.
Oh my goodness. I'm going to have to actually look up when did we watch, was it before then or after then, that episode of Beauty and the Beast where they ended it, where you didn't know if he was alive or dead or if he'd killed her or whatever, and we had to wait the entire summer to figure it out?
Yeah, I think that was afterwards. So, because I'm pretty sure that was right before the final season, I think. I think the next season after that was the final one.
I think you're right. Yeah.
It's possible Catherine and I were talking at cross purposes here, but the episode of the original Beauty and the Beast series that I was thinking of, I think, is called The Rest is Silence, and it aired June 2nd, 1989. the episode that Catherine was talking about of Star Trek, where we have the cliffhanger where Picard has been turned into Locutus, that aired on June 18th, 1990.
Ugh. Ugh. Oh my goodness. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. I was talking with Leland the other day because he's going to be going to WonderCon too, though he has his own ticket. And he says he really wants to start doing some reviews again sometime. And that'd be cool because I would like to have two voices on the site. Leland is not as tough on movies as your friend David, but he's definitely tougher than Hugh is. So that would be a nice balance.
I was about to say, let's find a little middle ground every once in a while.
Yes, yes, that'd be great. Anyway, all that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So we have decided that next week we are going to finish up the final season of Arcane, and that's going to be our main talking point next week.
I know. Oh, God. Got to commit to it. Got to do it. It's only 50 minutes. I just don't want it to end.
I don't either. Yeah, that's the whole reason. I don't know if I'm strong enough. It's going to rip our hearts out. But that and whatever else distracts us. So one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.